but you get born again, and for some of you older people, thankfully not you younger, but you're kind of in it alone for a while. The people around you are not agreeing with the choices you're making. And like I may have shared a week or two ago, you have an extra amount of zeal for what's been going on in your life. And so you have some truth. You have the truth. You finally have something that's so valuable to you. And you, as it says, I think in Timothy, you want to convince the gainsayer. And ultimately, you develop this type of perception, but you are right and everybody else is wrong. And maybe in my life I've carried that through to now, maybe. But I would say that I don't want to be that way. I want to be able to hear. I want to be able to hear other people and learn from other people. And if you could see my thoughts, they would probably be somewhere down that line. That deep down inside, I know that I'm right. And so I find it relieving that we do have the gift of repentance and that God is wanting to work through us and wanting to change us. And so if some of you have felt that over the years, I just want to say that I'm sorry. I have a lot to learn. And if the Lord tarries and we're here another 50 or 60 years, I'm going to find out that even the more. But I want to be easily entreated and stand on truth with you, brothers, and let's help each other, because the day is going to declare it, and that day could be today. But I feel like I have, not to prolong this, but I have something in me that wants to be right. I don't know if that's where that comes from. I want everything to be right. And I think that's where that spirit can come from, and I often do that then in a wrong way. Let's turn in our Bibles to Proverbs chapter 22. My heart is to glorify the Lord. I know you all have that heart as well. And I acknowledge the war that we're in. I acknowledge the enemy that is pressing in. And as Brother Nelson was sharing about relationships and how the devil wants to destroy relationships, I full well acknowledge that. And knowing also that our heart, it has to do with our heart. It has all to do with our heart. And that if I want things to be coming out of me that glorify God, it's going to have to happen first in my heart. It isn't going to work work if I try to manufacture it in my mind. It isn't going to work to try to push the right buttons or to learn enough, but it needs to be something that comes from within. In Proverbs chapter 22, I would like to preach out of verse 9. It says, "He that hath a bountiful eye shall be blessed, for he giveth of his bread to the poor." This verse would have jumped out of me a few months ago, and I remember making a note that I would like to preach about a bountiful eye someday. And just with a lot of reflection on my own life here in the last while, and all that's going on in my life, and trying to keep a pure heart, I had to think of a bountiful eye that kept coming back. A bountiful eye shall be blessed. And I would like to just talk about some of the words that are in this verse. This isn't expository. I'm not sure. I always broke messages down into subject messages, expository messages, and also burden messages. And this might be one here that doesn't fit any of those. But just an interesting verse and something that I want to strive for more in my own life. He that hath a bountiful eye shall be blessed, for he giveth of his bread to the poor. And breaking this down and just talking about some words that are in this verse, this word bountiful, when you think of the word bountiful, you probably get a picture of someone that has a lot, that has abundance, bountiful. If you have a bountiful supply of something, you would then feel that you would have a lot of something. You may also think, well, of course, this makes sense. Someone that has a lot of something, somebody that has a bountiful supply, it would be easy to then give of that to someone else. That makes sense. But I don't believe that's what this verse is talking about. I don't believe it's saying that those of you that have a lot shall give to those that don't, and then you're going to be blessed by doing so. I believe that this bountiful eye, this bountiful person, this word bountiful, is a person that no matter what state they are in, they are going to feel very thankful and very blessed. And that is why and how they're going to be able to give of that, no matter what state they are in. You have probably heard the saying in the past, he would give you the shirt off his back. That is a bountiful eye. Meaning that he would give even if he had nothing else to give. Now, if we are here representing the church of Jesus Christ, if we're here representing Christ himself, and people that may see us may not see anything else of Christ except for through us, I would say that everybody here is going to want to have this type of spirit. Everybody here is going to want to have a bountiful spirit. Another word you could say for bountiful would be generous. A generous spirit or a generous eye. I think the heart behind this bountiful life is a heart of thankfulness. If you find yourself this morning in a position, and we've already heard some of this, but in a position that you do not deserve anything that you have, but that all that you have has come from God. Would you feel thankful? We read Thursday night about every perfect gift and every good gift is from above, out of James. And so we know that everything that we have that is good is coming from God. In other words, we didn't manufacture it ourselves. The only abilities that we have came from God. One man once said that the people that shake their fist at God only can shake it when God allows. But when you have that heart of no rights, you will not only be extremely thankful, but you're also going to be very quick to give. This bountiful spirit would be the opposite of being entitled. Once you have entitlement or the thought that something is mine, it is going to be very hard to be thankful for it. gave you the mind or the motivation to put all that together? You may have heard the term, and usually you hear this from people that are older. When asked how they're doing, they say they're doing better than they deserve. We live in a land of plenty. Are you thankful this morning? You know, being thankful is actually something that's so elementary that we often miss it. Another thing that's amazing is it's often the poor that have the bountiful eye. Rarely is it the rich. I seen downtown here, I was waiting on a stoplight, and I seen at a corner a beggar in a wheelchair. It was an older woman in a wheelchair with a cardboard sign. And I watched as people passed by this woman as if she was not there. And my attention was then drawn to another very poor man with a bag around him with his possessions walking along the sidewalk. And I was curious to see what would happen when these two people crossed paths. And this man walked by this woman in this wheelchair. And like all the others, he walked by. And it appeared like he wasn't even going to stop and acknowledge her. But all of a sudden, I seen him stop. And he reaches into his pocket, and he pulls out some money, and he goes back to give it to this woman. And as I was sitting at that red light, I had to think, that man knows what it's like. That man knows what it's like to be in need. That man also has something. I'm not sure how much he had, but he had something. And that something that he had, he probably knew that he didn't deserve it. He probably got it from someone else. He had no entitlement. And so why not give it to this woman? She's the same as I. And out went the money. I heard a neighbor recently say that the more his brother gets, the grumpier he gets. Let's make it a point in our prayer life to ask God for a thankful heart. A bountiful eye is an optimistic person. Maybe you know what optimistic is. Maybe you have your definition. Having a positive outlook and expecting good things to happen in the future. It is the tendency to focus on favorable possibilities, look on the bright side, and believe that challenges will ultimately work out for the best. And what I love about optimism or being optimistic is that it's maybe is what you think or what naturally comes to your mind is being optimistic means you only look at the good. You only look for the good. But that is not optimism. That's positive thinking, possibly some other definitions for that. But optimism is not overlooking the negative. It's not overlooking the bad. But optimism, being optimistic, looks at negative situations with a positive attitude. Looking at negative situations with a positive attitude. And just think about it. We are here filled with the Spirit of the living God, the Creator, the beginning and the end, the Alpha and the Omega, the one that has all wisdom, who is wanting to impart it on us. And we come across a situation that is a bad situation, a situation that we don't know how to go through. And the bountiful eye can actually be excited about what is going to come of this situation. A bountiful eye is going to look at this and know that something good can come out of it. It is not overlooking. Can you imagine an ER doctor only looking at the positive and not the negative? A man comes in with a major gash, and the doctor commends him how nice and how well his kidneys are working. We wouldn't want a doctor that way. But instead, the doctor is optimistic, and the doctor is optimistic. Now, this is obviously a carnal analogy, But he's optimistic because he knows that he can take care of this situation. He has confidence in his abilities to make this person stop bleeding and quickly turn this situation into a positive situation. Where is our optimism? Is it in the Lord Jesus? Is it in the wisdom of God? Do we have faith in the promises of God? Do we know that God is going to work these things out for good? Each one of us here knows that life can be a challenge. How are we handling these challenges? The bountiful eye is thankful that there are solutions to these challenges. And he views the problem as small. I had to think of our minds, thinking about our thoughts, and how our minds control so much. The word says, "Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee." Our mindset, our paradigm, as we heard this morning, is it quick to look at the negative and get discouraged? Or as an opportunity? How can we as Christians live with a pessimistic spirit? We don't want to be around people that way, do we? We want to be around people that are optimistic. We want to be around people that have a bountiful eye. We want to be around people that are thankful. We want to be around people that are blessed. We want to be around people that are excited about handling solutions, situations, and bringing solutions. We want to be around people that don't look at the things that they have as their own, but would have the mindset that all that I have is yours. Those are the kind of people we want to be around. And where are you going to find those people at? Brothers and sisters, where are we going to find a group of people like this? A group of people that are positive, that are optimistic, that have been blessed by the Lord God, that have a bountiful eye, that are extremely thankful, that are quick to give, asking for nothing in return. Where, if we wanted to find a group of people, where should we go? Maybe you are tempted with the thought, if they had my problems, they wouldn't be so happy. And that is a very untrue statement. They would simply handle your problems in a very different way, and they would look to God for the strength to make those problems a solution and have a beautiful day. When you let a problem, a trial, a disappointment discourage you, you eliminate the opportunity to, one, fix the problem, and two, be example of Christ. And just to be clear, I'm not at all talking about conflict avoidance. I believe that if we are people that are trusting in God and walk with God, we're not going to mind conflict. We're not going to mind problems. We're going to look at it as there are solutions. We heard this morning that we build our foundation on the Word of God, and that the Word of God has answers for us. In contrast to a bountiful eye, I want to very quickly talk about an evil eye. In Proverbs, we read of a bountiful eye and also of an evil eye. If we turn our pages one time to Proverbs 23, it says, "When thou sittest to eat with a ruler, consider diligently what is before thee, and put a knife to thy throat, if thou be a man given to appetite. Be not desirous of his dainties, for they are deceitful meat. Labor not to be rich, cease from thine own wisdom. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings, they fly away as an eagle towards heaven. Eat thou not the bread of him that hath an evil eye, neither desire thou his dainty meats. For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, saith he to thee, but his heart is not with thee. The morsel which thou hast eaten shalt thou vomit up and lose thy sweet words. In both of these cases of these two men, one with a bountiful eye and one with an evil eye, I find it interesting that they're both giving bread. They're both supplying bread. They both possibly have the same amount of possessions. Whether they have a lot or a little, we don't know, but they both possibly have the same amount of possessions. But the Proverbs here does not view these two the same. And it's because the evil eye is only willing to give if there is gain for him. And often that is done because of recognition. The eye is selfish, it's stingy, it's a miser. And brethren, these things ought not to be in the church. A miser, stingy, selfish. I know the thought. You've worked hard for what you have. You have goals and you desire to reach them. You have a future. And after all, you are called to care for your family. In fact, the Bible actually says that you are worse than an infidel if you don't. But I want to tell you this, that kind of thought will never change. You'll never get ahead. You'll never get to a place where you can finally give. You're never going to attain. And you'll develop a rut of selfishness, and you will be one with an evil eye. After all, it's saying here that if you were to give, you will be blessed. If you give, you'll receive. And so when we say that we can't give because we're trying to get ahead, or we can't lend because something bad could happen, or maybe it would harm our life or our work, what you're saying is that God is not being truthful with you when he says that he will give more abundantly than you. But no, this verse here says that the man that has this eye will be blessed. Talk about promises. We read through promises, Brother Eli, a couple weeks ago. The more you give, the more you receive. Not just money or possessions, but in everything. But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Every man according to as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give. Not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, that ye always having all sufficiency in all things may abound to every good work. Now let's just be honest. Do we believe that? It's a tough one. It's a hard one. But the idea of honesty here is going to gain us a lot. See, when you're honest, you can't lose. Even if you're wrong, you can't lose. If you're honest, you're going to come out on top. Because God is going to want to work with that honesty. Give, and it shall be given unto you, good measure, pressed down and shaken together, and running over shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that you meet with all, it shall be measured to you again. Also the proverb, there is that scattereth and yet increaseth, and there is that withholdeth more than is meet, but it tendeth to poverty. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. Can we believe these passages? Can we believe the Bible? Can we say that is a promise, and that's a promise for me? I will not ever, ever be able to outgive God. It'll never happen if we have a bountiful eye. But I'd also talk, we're talking about being blessed here. Let's talk about being blessed. The world is going to say that a blessing is going to be the size of your bank account, the size of your farm, the size of your possessions. You see the man that has a lot of things, and he says, the Lord has blessed me. That's just very common. And maybe you can tend to feel that way as well. You have all these possessions. You live in the West. It's so easy to make money. God has truly blessed us. But let me ask you, do you really believe that's what we're talking about with blessing? I can go to somebody's house that has very much, and I can say in my heart, I know that this man gives a lot because God has given him a lot. Do we really believe that? We all know of people that have nothing but money, don't we? Are those people blessed? We also know of people that have everything but money. Maybe some of you have read that book about the Great Depression. We had everything but money. But if you were to look at those two pictures, somebody that has nothing but money and people that have everything but money, there's not a person in this room that knows who's going to be blessed in that situation. And so we have that perfect example of the people of the Great Depression. And the people of the Great Depression, they were trying to live and feed their large families. Back then, the family sizes were 7 to 9 children. They were trying to feed their large families with $1 to $2 per week. That's about what they would have. And it wasn't like they were wealthy people. There might have been in some far off in New York or so, but these people were all poor. Nobody had anything. The rich even, everything was taken from them. But we also know that these people pulled together. They focused on helping one another and were extremely quick to give everything that they had. If they found a place that was giving away bread, they immediately thought of their friends and family. Their focus right away, one said, went to their families, their neighbors, and their faith. And during the Great Depression, relationships went beyond expectation. People were experiencing relationship like they never, ever have before. You can read testimonies after testimonies after testimonies of people's lives in the Great Depression. How would you handle another Great Depression? If farmers couldn't afford to buy seed, if barns stopped selling, or people stopped building, if flowers were the last thing anybody would want to buy, if each one of us had our income cease, how would we react? Would we look at that as a blessing or a curse? I believe that this proves that the blessing God is wanting to give us is not wealth and possessions. He wants to bless us with peace in our heart. He wants to bless us with a thankfulness in our heart. He wants to bless us with a joy unspeakable and full of glory. And he wants to bless us with relationships that are amazing and lifelong. Just picture that. Relationships that are amazing and lifelong. That's what God is wanting to do. Money and possessions, we all know, do not buy friends, real friends, but kindness, love, and time buys friends. Do you have a thankful heart this morning? If you do, you are blessed. Is your first instinct to be kind and loving? If it is, you are blessed. Is it easy for you to turn a bad situation into a solution? Are you optimistic? Those are the blessings from God. Let's try to get away from the paradigm. financially, we are receiving a blessing from God. We know that God uses money, doesn't he, in his kingdom? 1 John chapter 3, verse 17 and 18 says, "But whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth." But whoso hath this world's good and seeth his brother have need and shut up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? The key to this verse is actually not giving. It's not a verse about giving. It's talking about a brother here that's doing well. He has this world's goods. How many of us would be able to put ourselves in that spot? But whoso hath this world's good. I think we all can put ourselves in this place. But John is not talking about giving. John here is talking about having compassion. Giving of our possessions is one thing, but having compassion is a bit different. This is a major part of a bountiful eye. I should probably give. Verse, having compassion flowing out of your heart. You know, it's one thing to be able to change what you're doing. It is good to be able to change what you're doing. We try to train our children in that, to be able to change what they're doing into something better. Whether it's their behavior, whether it's how they treat one another, whether it's their attitudes, we want them to do better. And there are things in your life that maybe you're trying to do better in, and that is good and right. But it's another thing if your heart is truly changed. It's another thing that if something happens deep down in your core, that the things start coming out of you that you're not forcing, or you're not being disciplined in. It's just a natural thing. And I can just tell you that having a heart of compassion is one of those things. You can try all that you want to muster it up, to feel sorry for somebody that's in need or hurt. But unless it's coming from your heart, it won't be real. It won't be real. We see someone in need, and we shut up our bowels of compassion from him. And John just saying, how can that be the love of God? How can that be like Christ? We also hear in Corinthians, we read about equality. It's probably the only, probably not, but it's one of the few verses I've never heard a sermon on. Equality. What does that mean? Do we believe it? Do we believe that the church of Christ is going to have rich and poor? Do we believe that we all should make sure that we're all making the same income each year? Is that what we're talking about, equality? That we have a meeting and we delegate how much money people can keep and how much they have to give? I think we understand that not to mean that, but simply that we are not holding on to anything. And if somebody has less than we or has need, and we can fix that need, we very quickly can hold out our hands to them. I know of a situation where there was a man that was needing a new vehicle. His vehicle was starting to ask, give him some problems. And so he wanted to buy a new vehicle, and he wanted to give this vehicle to another brother. because he realized that's not equality. And so he sold the vehicle. And I'm not sure what to do with all those things. I'm not saying that that brother did something wrong. I'm just simply saying that it was a situation where that often can be the case. We are doing better than this brother, and so we have the nice things and they do not. But if we have a heart of compassion, how can that be? How can we withhold our bowels of compassion from someone that has need? How can we do it? Now, I understand there's people that want certain ways different than others. We're not all the same. We're not all going to drive the same vehicles and have the same type of houses. But what I'm trying to get at is if our hearts, each one of us have hearts that we're just free to give, we don't hold any possessions because we don't believe that we've earned it. We don't believe that we've done anything special to get it. We don't believe that we have a measure above others, and so therefore we have more money and more gifts. But simply all that we have is from God, and we don't know what the future has. We don't know what tomorrow brings. We might be without everything in 1 or 2 days. And so we hold everything that we have extremely loose. It's called a generous spirit. It's called a bountiful eye. And God says that spirit will be blessed. You know, it's so prevalent. And I don't fault you. I don't fault you. I'm not saying that you're to be faulted here. But it's so prevalent to try to get life figured out first. I need to get this done and this done. I need to get all these things put into place before I'm able to give. And what that is I have a cup that is running over. And what runs over, I am willing to give, but not until the cup is full. That's what that spirit is. And it's a dangerous place to be. And it's probably not something that each one of us can say, you know what? I'm innocent of it. I don't know that anybody in this room can say it. It's something that we need to be crying out to God for. Lord, help me not to be entitled to the things that I have. It's a work of God. It's a work of God. And he looked up and saw the rich men casting their gifts into the treasury, and he saw also a certain poor widow casting in thither 2 mites. And he said, of a truth, I say unto you, that this poor widow hath cast in more than they all. For all these have of their abundance cast in unto the offerings of God, but she of her penury hath cast in all the living that she had. Does it hurt to give the excess? Does that hurt? It says here that these people were giving of their abundance. Of their abundance cast in unto the offerings of God. Does it hurt to just give the excess? How easy is that? In the Old Covenant, we see that the Jews were required to give tithe, which is 10%. Nowhere that I have found is that requirement in the New Covenant. Why is that? Why didn't Christ just take that into the New Covenant and everybody give 10%? People see what they make, and they cut off 10% and give to the treasury. We all know that he didn't put it in the New Covenant because the New Covenant is dealing with the heart of man. And he wants it to be your way of life, not a doctrine, not a commandment, not a law. He wants it to be a joy. He loves a cheerful giver. So Christ came to fulfill the old law. And what does that usually do with the old law? It usually makes it much greater, right? He didn't come to diminish. He came to extend it to a place where we have to have the power of God in our life. An eye for an eye is no longer, but now it's love your enemy. Keep the Sabbath day holy turns into be ye holy. We know about adultery, but what about tithing? What about 10%? How do you do it in your home? How do you do it in your bank account? How do you do it in your life? Is it kind of something that you do? You just kind of keep that as a guide? I think that can be okay. A reference? Maybe you find it that it's hard to give because there isn't a rule. Maybe you find that if somebody would just require it of you, it'd be easier. Maybe you're easy to forget to give. Maybe you're quick to spend and there's not much left. But Jesus says not to give 10%, but to give all. How do we do that? And so we hear that. Jesus says to give all. Jesus tells the rich young ruler to give all. And so somebody that has a bountiful eye, somebody that has a giving spirit, somebody that is generous, somebody that is thankful, somebody that is not taking possessions of himself, and he is told to give all, what does that look like? How do we make that practical? Our hands are open. I had somebody this week ask if I had a piece of equipment they could use. I said, I sure do. Somebody from the community, he asked me what my rate was. How much was I charging for this piece of equipment? I didn't know if he thought I had a chart or a pamphlet. I said, rate. We're here to help. I think the heart of giving all would be this. Maybe you have a certain dollar amount in your mind. Maybe you have a certain percentage in your mind that you give, and I think that's great, but that needs to be the minimum. That cannot be that you give 10 to keep 90. That cannot be that you give 20 to keep 80. It needs to be, here I am, Lord. What I have, I'll give. I have to put some money toward the church. I have to put some money toward the neighbors or whoever it is. But if something comes up, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. I'm saving money for this or for that. But Lord, you know what you need. And remember, God knows. God is promising to bless that. He's promising to give. We may not know what that's going to come back at, but we know that he will give back. Remember, I'll read it again. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down and shaken together and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that you meet withal shall be measured to you again. I would just pray that each one of us could try to have faith in that verse. Try to have faith in that verse. We're not giving so that we can receive. We're not giving so that we can have more back. Because you know what? We're probably not going to get it back the same way we gave. If I give somebody $1,000, I'm probably not going to get $1,200 back. If I give somebody a piece of equipment, I'm probably not going to get a new one back. It isn't going to work that way. But God is saying here that he will give it back. And he's going to give it back more so, more abundantly. Let's pray for faith. But we need to be good stewards is often something that is used. First Peter says, as every man hath received the gift, even so minister the same one to another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. You get this picture of a Christian receiving from God. It's flowing into God. It's flowing in from God, and it's flowing out. That's what you get this picture of. It's flowing in and it's flowing out. I know that this probably isn't an accurate analogy, but with grain elevators, the grain is going down, it's going out of a truck, going up and in. And sometimes those little trays, those plastic trays that take it up, they break and get caught in there. And all of a sudden the thing stops and you have a pile up. Is that what happens sometimes in our lives? We have this flow going, it's a beautiful flow, and God is pouring it in and we are pouring it out. And our relationships are beautiful. We're excited about giving. We're excited about blessing. We're excited about all these beautiful things that God is doing in our hearts. And then all of a sudden we get our eyes off the vision. We get our eyes focused on something that we want. And we can justify it. We can excuse it. We can do all these things. And so all of a sudden the blessing stops because it starts to pile up. God sees that we're not giving out and we become the Dead Sea, where there's an inflow but not an outflow. And it's because we're not believing in the promises of God. We also hear that people are afraid to give money. As good stewards, they're afraid to give money away to people or to things that may not be profitable or could be wasted. But what about spending money on themselves? Do these same people scrutinize that as much? In whatsoever ye do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not unto men, it says in Colossians 3:23. That whole idea of whatever we're doing it heartily unto the Lord, is an extremely encouraging verse. It reminds me of the verse that to the pure all things are pure. You know, life can get complicated. Choices can pile up. Decisions that we need to make can seem very heavy. They can seem extremely weighty. We look at the future. We look at choices. We look at all these decisions we need to make. We look at subjects like this here about money and about giving, about blessing, about being generous. And sometimes we get a little bit confused, but here it's saying that if you do it as unto the Lord, you can do it heartily. It is saying that you can do everything heartily. All that you're doing, whether eating or drinking, do it to the glory of God. You do with all that you have. And that means giving. That means blessing. That means helping. That means serving. It means everything. It means receiving. We're receiving heartily. We take it and we're thankful, having a thankful heart for the help that's around. There's no limit to it. Brothers and sisters, there's no limit to it. You can give, you can bless as much as possible and not out-give or out-bless the Lord. Is that convicting to us? Do we live that way? Are we doing it heartily? It's easy sometimes to make money heartily. It's easy for me. There's something tangible in front of me. I got two hands. I got a mind. I got a mouth. I want to do it heartily. It's easy. It's all practical. And we can do that in our work. But what about doing it heartily in our relationships? What about doing it heartily in our finances? What about doing it heartily when we see people around us that are in need? When we see brothers that are in need? I want to encourage each one of us to have a bountiful eye. And I want to close with a story from the 1930s. We lived a mile from a small town in North Mississippi. The Illinois Central Railroad ran near our farm. Daily, the train would stop to load on coal from a nearby coal chute. And when the train stopped in front of our house, young men would get out of the boxcars. They would come to our back door, cap or hat in hand, asking for food. Picture that. that was telling me that they tried to bring the bus stop in Dayton out to New Lebanon. But New Lebanon would not have it. We don't want that rift in our town. And here we have a family that has this going on right in front of their house. They usually wanted to do something to pay for their food. I remember they would ask if they could chop wood. I never remember mother or dad saying yes to their offer. The train needed an hour to load coal. Mother was a wonderful cook, and she always had plenty of cornbread, biscuits, and a big pot of homemade soup on the wood-burning stove, always. She usually had a dishpan full of tea cakes, and for beverage, there was plenty of cold buttermilk. When these young men came to the back door, Mother would tell them to go to the cistern house to wash, then come into the back porch where she had a table with their food. Mother and Dad would tell them to go to the orchard, when fruit was available, to get fruit to take with them. My father would explain to me that they were nice young men out of work from the north on their way to pick fruit and vegetables in Florida. Our doors were never locked. We had no fear in the days of the Depression. We attended church regularly, and we were taught to share God's blessings with those less fortunate. We had a big orchard, plenty of hens, a big garden, cows, hogs, and two horses. Our water supply came from a big cistern in the building out in the backyard called the Cistern House. Mother kept soap, lye soap she made, a towel, and a pan for water on the shelf of the Cistern House. Let us strive